Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to this week's Failed Critics podcast. I'm Steve Norman. I'm joined in a pub.
Yeah, Beef Eater.
It's a Beef Eater. The same Beef Eater we were in last time.
It was.
I wasn't here.
No, you weren't here this time. But no. You are here. You're here physically now.
You were invited last time.
Why didn't I come?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably too far away.
Because we told him the wrong day.
Yeah, I was here. No one else was.
Like the old British Airways ad.
Yeah.
Where is everybody?
I'm joined by Owen Hughes.
Hello.
And Andrew Brooker.
Gents.
And what's the reason for us being here? Other than food,
booze,
drink and...
An opportunity for us to do a possibly final podcast in person for Bell Critics.
Yes.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Sounds ominous.
It does sound a bit
ominous.
Sounds
like it needs an explanation.
Yeah.
Right. Is this an... Okay, this is going to be the announcement. I was planning on doing a proper preparation.
Owen's got better offers on the table.
I've basically finished my degree, and
it's like when Jerry left the Spice Girls.
I thought you'd say Jerry left Seinfeld, and it's the second.
No,
since you said Jerry, I think.
Oh yeah.
No.
You were saying I went Springer and wonder where he was going to go with that.
No, I went Halliwell.
Yeah.
The best Jerry.
Yeah, I'm either Halliwell, Seinfeld, or Springer. I don't know which of the three is most applicable. No, I have finished my degree, which was in journalism. I'm trying to get into journalism as a job. I've also set up...
You don't want this on your CV.
This is going to be buried. I'm changing my name. No, the Set the Tape is basically going to have a podcast soon. And I can't really run two. Is there a reason for that? And so... One of those had to go. It had to be Fail Critics. Not that it necessarily is ending completely. It just means it's not going to be a regular thing anymore.
Yeah.
We might come back and do a big film comes out and we just want to chat shit about it for an hour or so.
Yeah.
Or if we have ideas for triple bills.
Yeah. Basically, I haven't got the wherewithal about me to run a website. I'm more the talent, not the So.
No, I did. We've talked about it, obviously, and you know, if you wanted it, it would have been yours. But we've kind of thought that, you know, we'll move our considerable talent.
Five-year plans, wasn't it? It's 5 years. It's the end of the five-year plan.
That's it.
Yeah.
And 5 years being completely libelous every week on the podcast, and you can't have that associated with you.
Yeah.
Now you're trying to be a real journalist.
Yeah. No, it's not really that. I mean, it's just that I used Bell Critics. It was quite handy to get onto the journalism degree course anyway.
Really?
As part of my... Yeah, I used it as like evidence that I've been interested in... this media side of things.
They didn't listen to any, did they?
They didn't test it, no, luckily. Thankfully. But it just seems like a natural time to conclude it, really. And it's very sad, and we've talked about it like months ago. Months and months ago.
Yeah, they just dropped the bombshell on me, and I didn't talk to anyone for about a week.
Did you cry?
No, I was just in shock. I mean,
he just lives on his own.
I withdrew from society.
Yeah.
Is this your first time out since then?
Yeah. Not seen daylight since today, and I've come all this way on the train.
We still haven't seen daylight, it's pretty grey out there.
We are in a tiny little booth in the corner. It's actually quite good to do a podcast.
The audio's pretty good, yeah. Yeah, some nice pictures on the wall.
Some nice police sirens outside.
Yeah. No, lots of ambulances have been passed today.
Yeah.
Who is this old guy on the picture?
that I can't read it. A portrait of Jesuit called
Harry Oxford.
Titan Schoolmaster.
Titan?
Titians? T-I-T-I-A-N-S.
Titan. He's a Titan.
Titian. Picture of a Jesuit called Titian Schoolmaster.
Okay.
That's probably the name of the picture, right?
From the painting by something. I'm not reading that because it's not a painting podcast.
Titian Schoolmaster sounds like someone in a film I'd watch.
Sounds like someone in a film I own.
Yeah, the film I started. There we go, all three. But no, we're just here to do just another podcast, basically.
Yeah, we've not really planned anything. Well, we have. But like, I got the text message with our plan on my drive here, which means I've planned nothing.
No, we've got a hastily prepared ish triple bill, right?
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Which is that was like
which is our best film of 2017, TV show of 2017, and Netflix original of 2017, whether that's a feature length movie or their version of a TV show. It's not really a TV show on Netflix, is it? Because it's not made for TV. Just and you can watch a whole series in a day.
Yeah. It's just a Netflix original show.
Yeah.
Or Netflix series, they call it, don't they?
It's a programme or a show or...
But I do watch it on my TV.
But you could watch it on your phone.
I could, but it's not 50-inch now, is it?
Not really. Don't get 4K on your phone.
Well, I do.
But oh, you do?
I do, but no.
Yeah. I'm still confused about inches, so I can't comment.
No. But, so we've got that, and obviously we're doing just what we've been watching. No quiz. Maybe a quiz. We'll see. What happens when we get to Weatherspoons and we look at the quiz machine. But
what odd feature that would be. what we've been watching now, we take a look at the films we've seen recently. Last time we recorded for Justice League, I'd seen loads, hadn't I?
Yeah, you'd seen tons of stuff.
Yeah, when you'd messaged me this week for this one, I thought, I can't remember what films I've seen. I don't think I've seen anything, really.
Nothing at all.
Nothing worth, like, talking about that hadn't been done to death. Like, Force Awakens went onto Netflix, and with The Last Jedi coming out next week, I watched that.
Yeah.
And
still as good?
Still good fun.
You said fourth best.
Yes.
When we were talking about it earlier.
So, for me, anyway, people are free to disagree with me if they like. I think Empire Strikes Back is the best.
Yeah.
Then A New Hope.
Right.
Then I would say Rogue One.
Uh-huh.
And then Force Awakens. Then Return of the Jedi. Then...
You guess.
Then, then Revenge of the Sith, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones.
You'd really put Rogue One that high?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it really worked for something that wasn't part of the main story. It wasn't it wasn't set as part of the three trilogies.
Yeah.
But I thought it links really well between, it led right into A New Hope really well. It like perfectly did it. It just ran straight in. You could have watched them both back to back, which I did, and it just slots in seamlessly.
Okay.
I just thought it was clever the way they brought back Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the CGI young Princess Leia. It was only right at the end.
Yeah.
I thought Darth Vader was cool as f**k in it.
Marvel have been doing that shit for years now. No one brings it up.
But like, Darth Vader was f**king cool.
Yeah,
like really.
I will give you the Darth Vader scene was very cool.
Just so intimidating. I thought it looked good. I thought I can spoil it now. It's been out for over a year and people have seen it. I just thought it was really brave in the way they killed off all the main characters.
Yeah,
like that's quite great because they could have kept a couple of those characters around and done other non trilogy based films with Cassian and Jin and those characters.
Was Jin Donnie Yen? And one with the Force and the Forces.
No, Jin Ursa, she was the main lead. Any of those characters they could have kept alive and done something with them in other films and it would have been great, but they didn't. They had quite a brave decision. All the main characters in this film, we're gonna kill them all off. While it was Star Wars and so obviously Star Wars, it was different. There was no other than Darth Vader who was in a couple of scenes, there was no Force, there was no Jedi, there was no that side of it. I thought it was quite a good, like a heist movie. They were stealing plans for something. I thought it looked good, and I even liked the callbacks to Star Wars Rebels, which are in, 'cause I know it's a kid's show, but I like it. It's good for it. It's 20-minute episodes in their fourth and final season now of Star Wars Rebels, and I like the callbacks to that are in it as well. And it was just good. And I thought there was more to it than Return of the Jedi. I thought The Force Awakens was more fun than Return of the Jedi. So that's why that gets bumped down a little bit.
Fair enough. Presumably you'll be talking about this more detail with Chris Packett, Dave, and... And Paul, when we do the when you do the Star Wars podcast.
Anyway, what have you seen now?
I have watched a film that I know Brooke has seen as well, which was finally shown on Film 4 recently. Prevenge, Alice Lowe's film, which she starred in, wrote and directed, which is she plays a character called Ruth. She's 7 months pregnant. Her character is 7 months pregnant. Alice Lowe in real life was filming was 8 months pregnant. And it's about her unborn baby telling her to kill people because her, she and the baby blames her for the death of her husband, basically. So she goes around murdering loads of people. And it's... I kind of liked it and also felt it was a bit underwhelming at the same time.
It got a lot of hype.
It was very hyped.
For a little indie black comedy horror that shouldn't have taken as much hype as it got.
Well, I think the hype was kind of deserved if you consider that, okay, this is Alice Lowe who co-wrote Sightseers.
Yes.
And
co-starred in Sightseers.
And obviously, yeah, starred in Sightseers as well. And so this is her writing, directing and starring. I think the hype was fair. Yeah. Maybe like on a rewatch, without that weight of expectation, I'll like it more. And yeah. I think it's definitely got that feeling of being a cult movie, like one that's going to be seen a lot by lots of people. It'll be shown at like all-nighters, horror all-nighters and stuff like that. It's very competently directed.
Yeah.
Script is fine. Looks good. Acting in it is pretty good all around. Interesting characters, some kind of gruesome death, considering it was put together from like conception, that wasn't a pun about pregnancy, but conception to delivery, to just follow through on that pun, was a month, I think, turnaround from writing the script to filming, principal photography and all that palaver.
If I remember right, she literally she'd done it to keep herself busy.
Because she was about 6 months pregnant at the time. Couldn't get any work because no one was hiring her because she was pregnant. And so I thought, well, I'll just write my own thing. And so obviously the whole story is formed around the fear and anxiety of being pregnant and what happens when you're pregnant and, you know, bringing someone into the world. And it's obviously not directly doing stuff like that, but it does it around... I've written down a quote, actually, which I thought was quite sort of... she says it towards the end of the film, because she's at this point quite guilty. She's killed loads of people, feeling like she's, you know, blaming herself and stuff. And someone accuses her of grieving, and she says, "I'm not grieving. I'm gestating," which is obviously a funny line. But that's the whole kind of message of the whole film, I think. Yeah. It's she's about to give birth, which is quite a big thing to do. And so there's all this pressure, people always patronising her because she's pregnant, and she sees the midwife who talks down to her, and they have some funny scenes together. Yeah, I mean, overall, it's a good film. Perhaps I just expected more from it.
I liked it. I haven't felt the need to go back and watch it again, and now it's on Film 4, I suppose I should, because I've got no reason not to.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because it came out, I think you mentioned it as well at the time, where it came out around about the same time as Anti-Birth.
Yes.
Which was an American indie horror about getting pregnant and giving birth to like a giant head thing.
But Anti-Birth was a very... It's typical American fash, isn't it? Like kind of Prevenge was subtle in its comedy. It was
psychological more so than anything
It was... It had some very gruesome deaths, you're right, but the kind of the point to it was very subtle, whereas Anti-Birth really was not subtle in any way, shape, colour or form.
It was a stoner horror, basically.
Yes,
So there was a cultural differences between the two, but they both deal with similar concepts, which is about pregnancy and anxiety and stress and the way the world sees you and the way you see the world in that sort of situation. Yeah. And I thought, both kind of came out at the same time. I'm not sure which I prefer. If I was going to watch another one again, I probably would watch Anti-Birth.
Yeah, I think for rewatch value, I think Anti-Birth pips it for me. Not by much.
No.
But I think I had more fun with Antibirth when I watched it. More of the properly laughing out loud and more, holy fuck, what is going on here?
Because of that ending, right? Yeah. I mean, if you were going to dissect them from a... If you were going to write an essay about them, right? Prevenge probably has more to it. You could understand more. You could compare it with other films in the medium. And they keep referencing an old film as well throughout it. The black and white... I can't remember what the actual film is recommended. It's Calling Back series. But that's probably got more substance. But Antibirth is just more fun.
Yeah.
It's just completely over the top.
It's bonkers.
And it has the woman from... Orange is the New Black, who...
Natasha...
Yes, who's very good. I think she plays that role really well in...
Leon?
Something like
Natasha
that,
something.
The one with the long, crazy hair.
Yeah, the bird from American Pie.
And American Pie, yeah. So, that's what I've been watching, Steve.
Revenge.
What have you seen?
I'm going to stick with indie horror for that for this one. And I recently watched a film I missed at Fright Fest this year, which, by the time I... got to missing it, I realised it was a bad thing that I was missing it, but the way the schedules worked at Fright Fest, I couldn't. I had to make a choice between that and another film I was dying to watch, so I went to the film I was dying to watch, and this one is Mayhem.
I know this.
Joe Lynch's Mayhem.
Yes, the guy from Walking Dead.
Stephen Young. Stephen Yeun is in it. And the bird from The Babysitter. I've forgotten her fucking name. And I took a screenshot of the IMDb page because I knew
she's
I had...
She's in The Nice Guys.
Samara Weaving.
That's it.
This is Joe Lynch, the guy that made Everly, Wrong Turn 2, has made basically a comedy horror-ish.
Okay.
It's not really a horror if you... It is, but there's not a single scare in it. It's just very bloody, very violent. And it's about a law firm. So Stephen Young is a lawyer called Derek.
Yeah.
Who, along with the rest of his office building, is infected with, I believe it's called the ID7 virus. The ID7 virus is a virus that gives you, it just completely removes all your inhibitions. So we're talking violence, sex, everything.
Yeah.
Completely removes your inhibitions. Now, there is a cure to this virus.
Uh-huh.
So, the building is cordoned off and the cure pumped into the air conditioning system. So, he's on an 8-hour timer. And in the 8 hours, he has to, A, go and get his job back because he's lost it for being an arsehole, mm-hmm. or for not being a big enough arsehole, and get back Samara Weaving's character, who is Melanie. Get hurt because she's being removed from her house for not being able to pay her mortgage.
Right.
So they're trying to get that all signed off so that can, and in so basically he has 8 hours to climb up several floors of this office building to get to the big boss. And everybody is in his way, from the boss and his subordinates to the people he works with. Everyone's trying to kill him, or everyone's trying to fuck everybody else.
Yeah.
It's mayhem. Literally, it's mayhem. It is, without a doubt, probably the most fun 80-minute film I've seen this year.
Oh, really? Wow.
It is bonkers.
Yeah.
It is absolutely mental, but it is so much fun.
They were talking about the podcast you recommended to me with...
Movie Crypt.
Yes.
Him and Adam Green. Yes, yeah. So it's Geraldine Shadan. I didn't start listening to the Movie Crypt after I went to Fright Fest.
Right.
Which is where I then started feeling really sorry for myself for not going to see Mayhem. So the second... So the second it went on iTunes in the States, I bought it. Completely blind, just went, fuck it, I'm buying it. I spent $15 on far, far worse, I can guarantee it. And it turns out to actually be one of my best purchases so far this year.
That's always good when that happens.
Yeah, it's basically, you were saying earlier you haven't seen it, but it's basically the Belko experiment.
Mm-hmm.
If the Belko experiment was an out-and-out comedy, as opposed to just being a really dark comic.
Yeah, sure.
So the Belko experiment was made by the guy that made Wolf Creek.
Greg McLean. I looked that up because we mentioned him last week and we couldn't remember his name. So the guy who made the Rogue film.
Who made Rogue, so that tells you pretty much everything you need to know about Belko experiment.
Yeah.
If you've seen Wolf Creek, it's fucking nasty, but still kind of funny. Mayhem is basically really, really funny.
Yeah.
With some fantastic one-liners. Like, I was howling with laughter at this film. and at the same time just being really kind of bloody and violent and not mean-spirited, which the Belko Experiment is,
yeah,
or can be. Mm. I really like the Belko Experiment, it's one of my favourites of the year, but it is mean-spirited.
Yeah.
Mayhem is not. Mayhem is a buttload of fun.
Who is Glenn from Walking Dead? Because I don't think I've seen him in anything but The Walking Dead.
No, I haven't.
He was in one episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
This is before Walking Dead, though.
Right.
This is pre-Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And that's the only other thing I've ever seen him in.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, I can't think of anything I've seen him in, I don't know.
I mean, he was in Walking Dead for a good...
From the
four
start,
years,
wasn't he?
Well, what season did he get...
We're on season 6 now, aren't we?
He was in
season 8.
Was he in the
first? We're on season 8?
Yeah.
So he was killed at the beginning of season 7?
Yes.
Or end of season 6?
Yeah.
Because he was gone within the first 10 minutes of season 7.
Yes.
But so that mimics the comics, doesn't it?
Yes, it did, yeah. That was pretty much, well, it was like for like what happened in the comics. Pretty gruesome. Way to go.
But he is... fine. He plays a guy in a suit that's been fucked over and is angry and now... has had his inhibitions lowered. I don't...
But is he funny? Because I get the opinion he's quite a funny guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. There's an interview with him, actually, on one of the episodes of The Movie Cut, one of the recent ones, which is a really interesting talk. It talks about The Walking Dead and and they have, like, death parties at The Walking Dead, which is interesting.
I mean, there's probably some characters, it probably goes for anything based on a novel or comic or whatever... You must kind of know if you're at some point if your character's going to.
Well, this is there was
and
the conversation.
They could make changes. They could have changed him to somebody else, but you know, it's quite a big impact because he's a big character in it. So
I stopped watching The Walking Dead the year before that happened, and it was just kind of on in the background because the wife watches it.
Yeah.
But from what I gather from that interview as well, it's like they were talking about not having him killed off because he's a fan favourite character.
Yeah.
But you can't, if you don't kill him off, his missus can't become who she is going to become for future storylines.
Yes.
Isn't there like, is it called All Out War?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Yeah,
like,
and there's
literally,
not,
there's over my head.
Yeah,
right?
And there's not, I would have said as well, there's not an equivalent female in a relationship at that point in the show that you could kill off her partner instead of Glenn to make her become Glenn's Mrs.
Because in the comics it's Laurie who becomes quite...
Who's Laurie?
She was the blonde one who she had a relationship with Shane in the TV show, right?
No, that was Andrea.
Andrea was
Rick's
wife.
That was the chick from
Prison
Break.
No. His wife was Laurie. He was right, but I said the wrong name. Steve said it's Andrea. It's very confusing for anyone trying to keep up. In the comics, Andrea is quite good, and she ends up in a relationship with Rick. In the TV series, they killed her off because she was a bit of a bitch, right?
Fair enough.
Yeah. Whereas,
I think they went for a stage in Lost. It wasn't for drink driving. You remember in Lost when loads of actors seemed to get done for drink driving in Lost?
Michelle
they just
Rodriguez.
They'd fight them out straight away. About five or six like big casts got done for drink driving, so they just wrote them out straight away.
Yeah.
And in Walking Dead, it wasn't for drink driving, but it seemed like if a person was a dickhead and no one liked them, they just write them out.
Yeah.
And yet Shia LaBeouf can still get work.
Yeah.
And they even write in the accident that he has crashing while drunk driving into his Transformers.
But in the TV show of The Walking Dead, they seem to have replaced Andrea's character with Michonne.
Yeah.
And they seem to have, those two characters have kind of changed because Andrea got killed off ages ago in his TV show. Season 3, I think.
It was a while back.
In Woodbury. So they do, but there wasn't any obvious character change they could do to keep Glenn in it. There wasn't another woman in the relationship that you could have killed off their husband to make her become what Maggie's become in the comic.
Yeah.
So they had to.
She's gone.
Plus, as well, killing off such a big. I mean, they did two in that episode, Abraham as well, but he died around that time in the comics but you know, killing off someone who's been in the show for so long and so popular, Glenn was quite.
Yeah, because he was in the
killing
first
him
episode.
The season before as well, hadn't they? The season before they had him caught up in the fence with all the zombies, and they teased him.
He was under a bin,
wasn't
he? Under a wheelie bin, and somehow survived.
Yeah.
I mean, they've still got some character who's just been missing for a season at the moment. No one knows where he is. I think it was a guy called Heath, who's from Alexandria. He went on some
supply run with one of the women, and they got overrun by zombies, and he disappeared. No evidence of him being dead. He's just disappeared, and she found some other community.
Yeah.
Yeah, and no one's even mentioned him. So it's not like, I know we're like kind of war with Negan and his lot, but he's, no one knows he's dead. He's not come back. You want to go and look for him, maybe?
I quite like that though. Like if someone just as disappeared, because that probably would happen quite a bit.
Well, yeah, but in The Walking Dead as well, I think I mentioned this on the last podcast we did. So in season one, there was in the camp outside Alexandria, you've watched it, so you probably remember, it was a guy called Morales, his family. Yep. And when Rick's lot went off to the CDC and wherever they went, he went, no, we're going to go and try and find my family and wherever it was. Well, he turned up in season eight of The Walking Dead. But he'd somehow his family had been killed, died, whatever, and he had fallen in with Negan's lot, and he was, you know, one of Negan's guys, and he had like a face off with Rick.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, well, this could be quite interesting because, all right, they brought him back, but we haven't seen him since the first season, and he's one of Rick's. He was friends with Rick. He was in Rick's group. He was good mates with Rick.
Yeah.
But now he's on Negan's side. This could be quite. Then Daryl goes and puts a fucking arrow through his eye within about 10 minutes of being on screen. Oh well, that's, what's the point of that? Like, genuinely, what is the point of that?
Mayhem was really, Stephen Mayhem was really good in Mayhem, and 80 minutes long. There's no depth to anybody in it, but it's 80 minutes long. You don't.
It's
need
an 80
it.
Minute horror comedy, right?
Yeah. So. The entire film could be summed up with the line, "You open doors like my grandmother fucks."
By
pretty much
sets the tone.
Yeah, that's the film. I can't recommend it enough. One of the best films I've seen this year. Sadly, can't go into my top 10 of the year for any list ever because it's only out in America.
Yeah, not over here, so keep that one to yourself for the end of the year awards.
So this hastily arranged and badly put together triple bill.
You mean hastily arranged and badly put together podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, I literally got to like this morning and I was like,
the podcast wasn't hastily arranged.
No, the episode was.
We just planned it badly. Yeah, so it's a triple bill of our favourite film, TV show and Netflix original of 2017.
Yeah.
Going around Robin format, so we'll go in that order, film, TV show, Netflix original. What is your favourite film of 2017?
Okay, I'm going to be kind of brief about it because I've mentioned it a few times this year.
Is it Justice League?
It is not Justice League, no. It's Annabella's The Love Witch. A few times. I still don't think it's really been vetted. I've seen lots of good films this year. I've got a short list here that I drew up and then plucked it from. I still think it's my favourite. It stars Samantha Robinson as Elaine, who is a femme fatale type character. Very corrupting of men, but then uses magic potions to make them fall in love with her. And then kills them. Very standard.
Why not?
Yeah, like it kind of feels like an ode to
Black Widow spiders.
Yeah, to praying mantises. No, to 60s, 70s British horror films. That's what it feels like. You know, it
does have a Hammer feel about it.
It's got it feels like that. But, you know, because it looks like them as well. The aesthetic of the whole film is made up to look like it was from the 60s. It's shot in the same sort of format. It's all on film. It's everyone's costumes and set designs are all using, I guess, vintage clothing and sets and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not set in the 60s or 70s. It's still set in the modern day. So everything looks like that, but they still have mobile phones.
Yeah.
Characters that behave in the way that, you know, like you see cars in the background that are possibly due to the fact that it was made on a budget, but...
But she still drives a very vintage-looking car.
But she has a very vintage old car, yeah. Exactly, yeah. But I just thought it... from the first time I saw the trailer, because it was being shown at Fright Fest, I think, last... Yeah.
Year before last?
Yeah, it was in one of the little side screens that I didn't go into because it was my first Fright Fest, so I missed it.
It was just literally looking at the researching Fright Fest to think of what can we talk about, and I just watched a bunch of trailers. Had no idea what it was, and as soon as I saw the trailer, I was like, I need to make a note of this because I'm going to really enjoy the fuck out of The Love Witch.
Yeah.
And then I did. It was one of those films that I had a lot of hype about it and delivered. Like I say, I don't think it's really been bettered. But I've talked about it so many times now, I thought it's quite a good one to start.
Yeah. It does fall into a similar category for me to Prevenge. It's not the same film, not at all, but it does fall into that same indie horror. It took a lot of hype, so if you went in based on just the hype, you might not enjoy it as much.
Sure.
I really like The Love Witch.
I love it as well.
Maya hated it.
I know people who hate it, yeah.
She fucking loathed it. She went, I don't know why you're enjoying this. It's just fucking crap. I'm bored. I'm like, well, fuck you.
Because it's, I think because it's meant to
I can't believe I'm still married the way I talk to my wife.
Yeah, you probably won't be by the end of the week when she hears this.
No.
But the, it's meant to feel a bit kind of crappy, I think.
Yeah.
That's the whole point, because, you know, it's, 60s, 70s horror wasn't perfect.
No, it's got a little 70s Instagram filter on it when you watch it. It's... It is very.
The acting's kind of stilted, but again, I think it's by design rather than by chance. Yeah. You know, they didn't accidentally stumble upon not particularly good actors. I think they're putting in performances that feel like they're from, you know, a cheap old Hammer film.
Yeah.
Or Roger Corman film or something, you know. But, I've got a couple of films on my shortlist, though, which I'm quite interested to see if either of you two pick, so we'll probably talk about those in a minute. But yeah, Love Witch was my... is my film of 2017 so far.
Well, I can't pick my favourite film of 2017 because we're
Star Wars ain't out till next week.
I remember having similar conversations last year
before
Rogue One came out as well.
But if you're asking the best film of 2017, Oz, for me, that's a completely different question to my favourite film of 2017. Best film, you'd be looking at something. Probably something that's been critically acclaimed or award-nominated, or
I think you're not wrong.
And if you're asking me instead what the best film of 2017, which is what you might be when we're doing the awards at the end of the year, rather than my favourite, you might be asking for the best films. Then it's a completely different question. If you're asking for a favourite film of 2017, it's the one that I've enjoyed the most, the one that I would want to go and watch.
We're happy for it to be subjective. You know? Yeah. However you interpret the word best.
I think it's been quite a good year for some of the superhero films. Where, forget Justice League. Really forget Justice League.
Like, we will never forget Justice League.
Actually forget Justice League. But I think perhaps at the start of this year, it might have been the first time that people were getting a little bit bored of them. I think there's a lot of these superhero films coming out.
Can I just go on the record and say I came on the podcast at least 2 years ago and went, I'm getting sick of the back teeth of superhero movies.
People are going, yeah, we're getting bored. It's the same kind of thing. They're quite formulaic. Then this year you've had Guardians 2, Ragnarok, Wonder Woman and Spider-Man Homecoming. For me, they've all been great fun, good escapism. Like the kind of thing you want when you want to go to the cinema, just to like forget having to work 5 days a week for whatever reason.
Because we've got to pay the bills and pay for the Cineworld card so we can go and see these movies.
You just go in and enjoy yourself for 2 hours or whatever. And out of those four, I would say I probably enjoyed Thor Ragnarok the most. I thought it was just a lot of fun. Didn't expect it to be
as Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes. I didn't expect it to be as fun as that, or as funny as that, really. It was just great. And Star Wars is now yet, so if I was picking my favourite, it would probably be that, because I had the most fun watching it in the cinema.
It was a weird one though for me, because I went into Thor, I fucking hated the Dark World much.
It was just boring.
It was
bland.
Boring and bland. It was dark but it didn't work.
I mean, the first Thor I liked the kind of Thor being the
fish out of water comedy,
trying to learn Earth and human customs.
Yeah. So I kind of went into Ragnarok going, I really liked Marvel the last couple of years, and even its misfires I've enjoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still, Thor 2 was shit, and I thought, oh god, this is going to be crap, but I loved it.
So much fun.
So funny. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. The thing that made me more hopeful for Thor Ragnarok was the director. I've never heard his name pronounced, so I'm probably going to mangle it, but Tommy
Taika Waititi or something. Yeah. I don't know, that may be the most racist thing I've ever seen.
The guy who made What Are We Doing?
No,
he's definitely not the most racist thing I've ever seen.
Probably isn't. The guy who made What We Do in the Shadows and...
Where the Wild Things Are?
Where the Wild...
Is that him?
No, not Where the Wild Things Are. Hunt for the World of Beasts.
Hunt for the World of
People. World of People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got there in the end.
Phantom of the Menace.
Phantom of the Menace. Yeah, so... Gosh.
But he was also the best director cameo I've seen in a film in years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, ridiculously funny.
I can't, what was his name? Like, Kronk or...
Korg.
Korg. Yeah. He was fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it was just the accent.
Mick's dead. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mick.
Yeah, squished him. No, the...
That dude needs to get his own film.
Yeah.
They can't write him out of the MCU now.
No,
they're
going
to put him into the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Just have him in Infinity Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just turn him up. He's got to be in it.
So I was a little bit more hopeful for Thor Ragnarok than I was for Thor Dark World.
I mean, I was hopeful, but at the same time, I was very...
But Dark World...
I was dubious.
But Dark World had its own issues in that it was... Wasn't it originally meant to be Kenneth Branagh, and then they changed it to the guy who directed loads of games of Game of Thrones episodes?
Yeah. It has issues in as much as it just wasn't as much an enjoyable film as the rest of it.
No.
And this is the thing that, for me, Marvel... is best at, is even if it's a bit of a crap film, I still come out of it having enjoyed myself.
Sure.
Spider-Man Homecoming aside, I fucking hate Spider-Man Homecoming, but Dark World was terrible and I didn't enjoy watching it. I don't enjoy watching it now. I own the fucking Blu-ray because my OCD won't let me have a hole in my collection, but I don't enjoy watching it now, and I was really quite worried. But no, unfounded worries, it turns out. I thought Ragnarok was great.
Yeah.
I laughed my arse off. Took Kid to see it, she loved it.
I still think Wonder Woman is the best superhero movie of the year, though. I think just everything about Thor Ragnarok was good, apart from the story, which is a bit of a nothing story. But it was very funny, very...
I was definitely filler until we get to Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, the lot of the Marvel films lately, the plot has just been filler.
Doctor Strange
was the same. I know Brooker hates Homecoming, but that worked.
Yeah, that was a standalone story, wasn't it? It was quite good. It was an introduction that had a purpose. Whereas something like Doctor Strange was, here's £200 million so we can make sure that...
My biggest problem with Doctor Strange was Doctor Strange is an unlikable douchebag in it.
Yeah.
Redeems himself. Magically, no pun intended, but just magically redeems himself somehow.
I don't understand how. I don't mind Benedict Cumberbatch, but I don't think he's right for it.
And I think that was the biggest problem. It was stunt casted.
I don't know.
I liked him. I thought he was great as Doctor Strange, and I did enjoy Doctor Strange, but I do think he was stunt casting.
Maybe. I don't know.
Obviously personal experience, but like my old girl only went to see Doctor Strange because Benedict Cumberbatch was in there.
Yeah.
And now she's stealing all of my Blu-rays to watch.
Ant-Man wasn't this year or whatever. You know, that was a set. I liked Ant-Man. It was loads of fun, but again, it was the plot was a filler. There wasn't a lot going on in the plot.
We're still
Ant-Man
10
was,
years.
Ant-Man was great fun.
Yeah. Well, Ant-Man and the Wasp is coming soon as well.
Yeah.
The thing is that with Doctor Strange,
going back to Infinity War, didn't see them in the trailer, did you?
No.
Unless they were very tiny. Could have been very, very tiny.
Well, you did see Captain America with the beard.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of things, though. Like,
yeah, he looks like after Civil War, he went off and started an indie band.
Yeah. But there's certain characters.
The Arctic Monkeys.
There's certain characters who are going to die in Infinity War, right? I mean, even if you go back to Iron Man, was it Iron Man 3 or was it Age of Ultron, where he was having PTSD and had that dream and he saw all the people, all the characters dead?
Mm.
It's a good point.
I think that's Age of Ultron.
Was it? Yeah. So
just have to see whose
contracts are running out. Yeah.
Yeah. So Chris Evans will go. Robert Downey Jr. probably will this time.
Yeah.
I don't know who else.
I don't think they'd kill them all on this set. I think they'll kill one of those two off, and the other one will be written out. But that always leaves, if they do a phase 4, phase 5, always leaves come back. You know,
I think
one film down the line, we can get them back, chuck a load of money at them. Here's
You're
$20 million.
Yeah. You'd almost certainly lose for half an hour. Steve Rogers will almost certainly die, I reckon.
I know Bucky will take over.
But I want Bucky to take over. I bet Falcon does, actually. Would be my bet.
Could be.
I think one of
Falcon, I would like Bucky to, because he's one of my favourite characters
one
ever.
One of Falcon actually. Or War Machine are dying. Guaranteed.
Well, they didn't kill off War Machine in Civil War.
No, they lined him up now, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, Brooke, what's your favourite film?
The one film you missed off of your list of superhero films. Logan.
Logan, I did, yep. Yes. And Logan was...
And it is, you know what, it's a tough list for me as well, because while we were talking, I was going through my list of films I've seen this year. I've seen some fucking bollocks this year. But I've seen some great films as well. Like, in the short list would be things like John Wick 2,
yeah.
Which I thought was outstanding. I've seen a lot of weird indies that are only out in the States,
yeah,
so I can't really bring those into it. But Logan, for me, is the... Even if you take away the superhero bit of it, it's one of the best standalone films. It is the best standalone film I've seen this year. And I think the argument is there, my favourite or the best.
Yeah.
I think the best will probably be, for me, maybe Moonlight. I fucking love Moonlight.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
But my favourite, and close second to the best of the year, I think, is Logan.
Yeah, it was. I don't know why, because it was just great. I mean...
It's
fun, but it's not fucking. It's not like a kids' film. It's not like Thor fun, is it?
No,
it's not like, you know, colourful and quips and jokes and funny and like over the top big CGI action scenes. But it's Hugh Jackman sending himself off as Wolverine, unless Disney buy Fox and tempt him back.
Yeah,
I don't think he'd do it. I genuinely.
No, I think if Disney buy Fox. They will break away from that X-Men and they will introduce the X-Men as new.
Yeah.
It'll be a completely new cast. It won't be Patrick Stewart, it won't be James McAvoy, it won't be Fassbender. It'll be how they do it, whether they kind of bring them in as completely new, so mutants have only been appearing in the last 5 or 10 years from as of now, whether they somehow backdate it and bring it in, that whatever happens, but I think it'll be just, if they do it, it'll be completely new. It's easy with the Fantastic Four because all their films have been shit, so no one really cares, but some of the X-Men films have been good.
Feel sorry for anybody that they decide to bring in to be Wolverine.
Yeah.
If you'd have said it 5 years ago, I would have gone, yeah, alright, because... You know, Oranges was crap and X-Men 3 was crap and okay, so replayed, but after you follow up the Wolverine, which I really liked, I really enjoyed the Wolverine and Logan, you can't be the guy to follow that.
Yeah.
You know, no, I fucking loved it. It was an action film, it was a western, it was, I can't think of a single superhero film, let alone any other film this year, that's left me in bits every time I've watched it. And I watched that thing at the cinema 3 times, and I've watched it at home 3 times since.
Yeah.
And every time I get to the end, a fucking blubbering mess.
Yeah, it was a nice way for Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart to stand off their characters, which they've been doing for nearly 20 years.
Yep.
I know there's other characters, you know, the only other one really was Ian McKellen as Magneto.
Yeah.
Because all the others have, you know, other than cameoing in whichever one it was.
Well, we have
Apocalypse. What was the one before Days of Future Past?
Yep.
Other than sort of some of the ones from the original 3 films cameoing at the end of that as teachers at the school, they've not really been in it, but those 3, Wolverine, Magneto and Professor X, they've been in all of them pretty much. And Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen and Hugh Jackman have been in most of them.
Hugh Jackman had nothing but a cameo in First Class.
Yeah,
we just told him to fuck off.
It was a great cameo.
It was brilliant. It was the first time we ever heard him swear as well, which is great.
But yeah, it was
a bit of that film.
It was just a nice way for 2 of those 3 to end their involvement with it.
Yeah, I think it was, again, a bit like Thor, I went in really kind of worried.
Yeah.
Because it was the first film after Deadpool, where Deadpool became the highest grossing R-rated film and the highest grossing R-rated comic book film, and all of a sudden R-rated comic book shit was everywhere.
Yeah.
And then we got, oh, Fox are going to let James Mangold make Wolverine be R-rated, and we're like, you're going to fucking ruin it? I thought, you're just going to make it bloody and violent for the sake of bloody and violent. It was bloody and violent, but most of it had a point. The bloody and violent bits were fun. You know, they weren't gratuitous. They were a lot of fun. They were great. The characterization in it was fucking awesome. I cannot fault Logan. It wasn't a kid's film by any stretch of the imagination. And as much as, again, my measuring stick for this now is if I can let the kid watch it. Because
yeah.
She loves her superhero films. She's watched all the X-Men stuff. She doesn't understand most of it, but she likes what she likes. Wolverine. She loves watching him do his thing. I can't let her watch that.
No.
Then not.
No, it's not
just,
really.
I just can't. Like, she's desperate to watch Suicide Squad. I can't let her fucking watch that either.
No.
But, yeah, Logan was a brilliant, brilliant film. And again, it works as an action film. It works as a fantastic Western, because it is a Western, just a modern-day Western. And as a superhero film, I think it beats Wonder Woman. But only just.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, the main difference between them, Wonder Woman's got a terrible ending again, it's a big CGI monster fighting thing, whereas Wolverine's is more impactful and meaningful.
Everything about Wolverine feels like it could be real life.
Logan, sorry, I keep calling it Wolverine.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Everything about Logan, obviously, you know, it's superheroes, it can't be, but everything about it feels like it's grounded in reality, whereas Wonder Woman is not.
No.
I don't think that's not a negative for Wonder Woman, it's a superhero film.
I mean,
that much of a shit. I prefer Logan over Wonder Woman because, like I say, Logan had an emotional impact on me. Wonder Woman didn't.
No.
And not because I'm made of stone, it just didn't. Mm. I'm not... I don't get all blubbery over empowered women on screen. Against Wonder Woman. I just thought, Wolverine, like I say, left me in as a blubbering mess every time I watched it. And I've said I want to watch it again before the end of the year, and I'm sure it will do it again. And if I know a film can do that to me on the 7th or 8th viewing, there's got to be something about it, or I am just a giant pussy. Probably that one.
It's funny, there's a couple of films I've seen in the cinema more than once this year.
Yeah.
Don't normally do that very often. Wonder Woman was one of them. I also saw War of the Planet of the Apes twice in the cinema.
I only saw that once. I would have seen it a second time.
Yeah.
If timing had allowed.
Yeah.
My thing this year just didn't really, unless the film was spectacular, I had to not go and see a film a second time to watch something that I could add to my list.
That was great.
It was really good.
It was really good. It was a good way to end that trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although I can't
carry on.
They've not announced anything, but I just think you don't restart that franchise if you're not making Planet.
Yeah.
Why would you restart that franchise if your end game isn't to make Planet of the Apes?
Well, I mean, Andy Serkis has been left to do things now, hasn't he? He's off doing Avengers now, and he's directed a film.
And he's in Star Wars.
So he's certainly not doing it anytime soon.
No,
but I mean, they don't have to get him in because his character has died.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
The work he does in it, and the other guys who do, other men and women who do the apes, and the it's fantastic, isn't it? Making them so believe. And I was reading interviews at the time where he's like, well, he'd been working on progressing it, so. Working out how to make them look like they'd evolved more over the course of the three films, how they'd learnt how to talk and how they'd walk differently and walk.
Yeah.
Wow,
it's
mental.
It's very precise, isn't it? I also saw Alien Covenant twice in the cinema and I bought it as well. I didn't really buy it.
Why?
I don't think I saw it twice. I bought it on 4K Blu-ray. I don't have the capability to watch it in 4K, but I bought it 4K. I've done that a lot this year.
Yeah. I really there were obvious flaws with it, but I like it as a concept. I think it's quite an interesting movie.
I liked it.
And I'm gonna.
I'd managed to split myself away from being angry about it not being an alien film after being a fan of Prometheus, so I'm quite happy to just follow on with whatever Ridley Scott decides to do.
Exactly. Also, I'll do the fingering scene that people take the piss out of. Annoys me when people completely. I think deliberately misinterpret it the same way they deliberately misinterpret the Martha scene in Batman.
I knew you were going to say
really,
that.
Yes, that pisses me off every time. Right. Also, T2 Trainspotting I thought was really good.
Still not watched it.
No, well, I wouldn't expect you to, Brooke. But that's still one of my favourites this year. Loving Vincent, like if we're talking about best film, the whole idea that every individual frame was hand painted, so that just blows my mind the more I think about it.
Jesus.
And I watched Creep 2 recently.
No, I haven't seen Creep 2 yet, mainly because I haven't seen Creep 1.
Oh,
I've never watched it, and Creep, I do really want to.
Creep was one of my favourite films of 2015.
Yeah.
And Creep 2, it's not the same level, but still very good. But also Get Out, which I thought might have been one of our choices, was good.
I've watched it once at cinema, and I've watched it twice,
okay.
I think, since. I bought it on Blu-ray, and I saw it at the PCC All-Nighter.
Ah, right, yeah.
It's a very, very good film.
It's a weird one to watch with my girlfriend.
Oh yeah, I bet it was. But what did she think of it though?
She thought it. She didn't like certain elements of it.
Yeah.
For some quite obvious reasons, but she thought it was an interesting film.
Yeah.
She didn't hate it, but.
No, it's a
interesting watch. I've taken to see that in 12 Years of Slave since been with us.
Wow.
I know how to pick them.
Yeah. Did you go see Birth of a Nation as well?
Oh, don't go see Birth of a Nation, we just don't.
No.
I mean, there's quite a few films that I've enjoyed a lot this year.
I'm kind of looking through my list. I have seen some absolute bollocks this year, I really have. In my chase to watch 365 films, I have watched some absolute dog shit. Yeah. I watched Gold, which is fucking terrible. But yeah, I've got a couple. Fences, was that this year?
Yeah, with
Denzel Washington. Yeah.
Not from Only Fools and Horses before Steve mentions.
John Wick 2, which I really did like John Wick 2. What the fuck? Oh, Bethany. Oh no, that's American. You that wasn't released over here, so it doesn't count.
I mean, I think there'll be some interesting choices coming up in our end of year awards. I don't really know what's going to win this year.
No.
It's not like obvious other years where. I think this is similar to like when in 2013. Where Clayd Atlas won. I think we weren't really expecting Clayd Atlas to be. It's a good film, but it was like, is it the best film ever? Like, of that year? It was one of those strange years, so I think this year might be similar.
It depends who votes as well.
Yeah.
I seem to be that guy as well that watches bizarre films and no one else, well, only like three other people watch.
Yeah.
Like, I fucking love. Did you guys watch Raw?
I haven't seen
Raw was great.
The French
cannibal movie.
Yeah.
I will be the only person that votes for that when it comes to the end of the
Maybe.
Year.
Maybe. I think I've heard of other people talking about it.
The Handmaiden. Did you see The Handmaiden?
No, not watched that yet.
Transfiguration?
No.
That's fucking brilliant. You'd love The Transfiguration. But these are all films that I loved. And when I go through my list at the end of the year, I go, oh, I'll do that. Miss Sloane?
No.
Yeah, another great one. But none of those will be on the top 10 list because no one else fucking watched them.
Yeah, maybe.
Should we move on to television?
Let's do TV.
Yes.
Might be a quick round, I think.
Yes, this will definitely be quick.
Owen, what's your favourite TV show of the last calendar year?
So, I mean, the picking stuff that came out this year, rather than just things that I watched for the first time this year, because I also watched Peaky Blinders Series 3. The first time this year, despite being a big fan of the first two series. I got into Peaky Blinders after Series 3 had already aired. No, Series 4 was on TV and was doing really well. It was written, the show that I think is probably been my favourite, there's another one written by Stephen Knight, the same guy who wrote Peaky Blinders, called Taboo, which was on in January, which starred Tom Hardy. So I thought Booker might have seen this one.
I have seen some of Taboo.
I
recorded all of it.
Yeah.
Because I watched episodes 1 and 2, recorded all of it, and then because it's BBC and BBC iPlayer, it vanished from my Skybox before I had a chance to watch it.
Right.
But because of who made it and who's in it, it is literally just a case of the second I see it cheap enough on Blu-ray, I will just buy it.
Yeah, it's worth it.
I don't need to have seen it all to know that it's worth watching.
Yeah, it's so it stars Tom Hardy, it's written by Stephen Knight, it's executive produced by Ridley Scott, and it's set in the early part of the 19th century, and what happens is it kind of plays as a mystery, it uses British politics of the era, and Tom Hardy was on a boat that capsized, right, a ship rather than a boat, and the kind of mysteries about this what was on the boat, where it was going, why, who was behind it, like the East India Company, or is it to do with the American government, or is it to do with the British government? Because, you know, you're thinking the sort of American Revolution is quite fresh in my mind. And
yeah.
Then they have the whole thing about he lived in Africa. Tom Hardy, this is, went to Africa and got into lots of the culture and comes back and is treated as, well, they, you know, use the N-word, and that's how they describe him. But also he's having an incestuous relationship with his sister. But it's like, it took me a little while to get into it. So it started as one of those shows that I really wanted to like and didn't quite click, it didn't quite register with me. It came out in January. I think it was the first show that I watched this year, basically. But it was one that's taken me until only quite recently to finish. And when I started it, I wasn't sure. But I had it all recorded on my Sky box. And just in the process of clearing stuff off my, well, not Sky, I've got BT, but off my TV box, I finished it off. And actually, by forcing myself to watch the last few episodes, thought it was incredible. Actually, yeah. I think it all comes together. It all makes sense towards those last sort of three or four episodes. I just think it's possibly the best written thing, certainly the BBC have done, since Wolf Hall. I think it's just great. Absolutely fantastic TV. Tom Hardy is excellent in it, as you kind of expect. He does his mumbling to himself.
I love his mumbling.
But you don't get Tom Hardy to do anything else, right? That's where you get Tom Hardy.
I love Tom Hardy. I don't feel like I've watched enough Tom Hardy in 2017.
No, I did. We talked about this last week, but I watched Mad Max Fury Road in
Black and Chrome.
Talking of Tom Hardy and mumbling, I mean, the film I didn't mention in best film or favourite film of 2017 because I spoke about superhero film Dunkirk.
Oh, of course,
which I thought was really good.
Dunkirk was absolute bollocks.
I thought it was good. I thought it was.
It was kind of docudrama, wasn't it?
Yeah, some parts of it weren't too good, but I thought in general it's good.
I thought the sound design was gorgeous.
It made you feel like you're right in the middle of it. Yeah. Like it was, it proper. Like the only other time I can think that sound has had that kind of effect on making me feel right in the middle of the film was when I saw that film that Jack O'Connell was in, where he was the soldier.
71,
where the bomb went off in the pub. And when the bomb went off in the pub, it felt like I was in fucking bomb blast. It proper disorientate. And that's the only other time I've really felt in the cinema that the sound has done what the sound in Dunkirk.
Yeah, see, I saw Dunkirk.
I thought it looked good as well. I mean, yeah, I like Dunkirk a lot.
I saw Dunkirk in the Atmos screen at Milton Keynes, and the sound was terrifying. It was so, so good. So the film was so shit. I hated it. I hated the intertwining timelines.
Yeah.
I hate the fact that somehow Tom Hardy is a superhero and can keep his plane flying longer with no engine than he can with an engine over a beach that has never been touched by a bomb, considering what we'd seen the previous two fucking hours. I didn't like it at all. I wanted it to be good. I've been a fan and a defender of Chris Nolan for a long time. I didn't fucking like Dunkirk one bit.
No, it's interesting. I mean, I think. But anyway, we don't need to talk about Dunkirk.
My favourite TV of 2017. Well, we spoke about this before we started recording earlier, that I've not really watched much TV. I've watched a lot of Netflix originals, and Netflix and Amazon Prime VOD have changed the way you consume television, because they just chuck all their original stuff on there in one go. I don't know if Amazon does anything with stuff like Man in the High Castle,
stuff that they make.
Yeah, stuff goes that they up make.
American Gods.
Not stuff like this.
Well, no, because American Gods was week by week, because that was Showtime?
I think so,
And it's the same
and with Preacher
Netflix,
as well.
Something like Netflix and Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty was on TV in America. It was only on Netflix in the UK, so they do it week by week. Yeah. The stuff they make themselves just goes up in one batch. So you can choose how you consume it more. You don't have to wait week by week. And I made the point earlier that if for whatever reason you're busy and you miss an episode, you then got to catch up on two a week if it's a weekly thing. So it's much harder.
When you get to a show like American Gods, that can be quite hard. That's a hard go in two hours as well.
And unless it's really gripping, or it's an easy watch, or it's a shorter one, more like a sitcom kind of thing, 25 minutes when you don't have the ads in it, and you're like, it's easy. But when it's like an hour long show and you've missed one, you think, well, I've got to watch two of them to catch up. I really can't bother to watch two of them.
I could watch a film in that time.
Do you think that works with Game of Thrones? Because Game of Thrones, right, is still possibly the most popular TV show around at the minute, right?
I think Game of Thrones suffers from that as well, though. Like, I can't binge Game of Thrones. It's so hard going to binge two or three episodes at a time. I mean, I don't watch Game of Thrones anymore anyway, but when it was on, when I at the height of me loving Game of Thrones, to buy a Blu-ray box set and then binge it, was hard work.
See, Game of Thrones is one of the only shows that I've watched this year. Now, Walking Dead's up, and I'm fed up with Walking Dead. I'm watching it because I'm an idiot. So that's not making my best.
That's what everyone else watches.
Game of Thrones, I still like it, even though you can see they're coming towards a conclusion. The seasons are shorter. It seems to be a little bit rushed. People picking fault with a plot, saying, how can a raven fly that far in that amount of time and then they get the dragon?
It's a film about winter zombies.
It's
a film about ice zombies, a massive wall made of ice, and there's dragons in it.
Yeah.
And there's some magic as well.
Let's worry about how fast a raven can fly.
Who gives a fuck?
I think
do something else with your life. Go and watch something.
Go watch documentaries.
The whole thing is like the conceit of it is you have to believe everything that happens within the like diegesis of the world that they've created, right?
Yeah.
If something like it takes them so long to walk from place A to place B, then surely it means that if you set a crow off from place A to place B, you have an idea in your head of how long that's going to take. So I kind of understand why people get frustrated with it. But saying that, the caveat is just doesn't matter, does it? It's a TV show.
Just say it's a magic crow.
Is it entertaining?
It's a magic crow. It's got magic in it. It's quick.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the fastest crow they got. It's like having the fastest horse.
Yeah.
Right. It's a really fast crow. It's a bit magic.
Just deal with
get
it.
Get on with it.
He is the Flash of pigeons.
So that weird witch woman who's old but looks young and whatever, and they've got she put some magic on that crow. She went real fast.
Well, her super vag works on everything else. Maybe it works on crows as well.
And there it goes. It's quick. And dragons, dragons are probably quick, aren't they?
Probably. It will be quite quick.
Yeah, they're probably pretty quick when they're going full pelt. So. And they can breathe fire, so get over it.
Yeah.
But that's not. I was actually going to go for a documentary because I was going to go for the Blue Planet.
Blue Planet 2, yeah.
Because forget Attenborough's narration for a while. I mean, while that's obviously great and he's an institution, and while I doubt at his age he goes out on set much anymore. I did the air quotes thing from set for people listening, because it's not a set, but you know. He's obviously well educated in that area, but it just looks amazing for a start. It just looks beautiful. How they film some of it, I know they've recreated some of it, but how they film the most part of it is just astonishing.
Well, they don't. I mean, the recreation scandal, air quotes again, the recreation scandal was that they shot footage of one, was it a lizard or. Antelope or some creature.
The Blue Planet, it was something underwater, but they recreated it either in a tank or something, and they did it, I think, to the most it could have been like in real life. And it was because when we went out there filming, they didn't do what they wanted to do. So we did this.
It's only manipulation in terms of.
If it was everything.
Yeah. They're not saying that this is what these creatures do in the wild when they've never been observed to do it in the wild.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not. It's just choosing the footage to show you, demonstrate it.
It just looks stunning, and it is, interesting. And it's great television, and Attenborough's just...
Well, the thing that, people like Attenborough because of his voice, but I think if you... Like, we did it in university. You analyse script writing for documentaries, and... It's his script as much as anything that makes him so good at what he does. You can compare it to anyone. You can have a look at Brian Cox, who does similar kind of scripting, or Dan Snow even, does a lot of... But you look at Attenborough's scripts, they're very minimal. You know, he uses not very many words to say things in a very simplistic way, which tells you everything.
Yeah.
And It's fantastic. He's the best in the world at doing that.
Does he? I mean, does he have a hand in the scripting?
He writes it.
He's. It's just. I mean, he does try and appeal it to a general audience. It's not like it's specifically.
By scripting, I mean he writes the things he reads out. I mean, you know, people, producers will structure and edit a show together. But it's just like he's phenomenal. But you're right. I don't think he's really out there.
I know he used to when he was younger. He'd go out there and do it, but you can't really
send him on a zip wire through the jungle.
You can't really.
You should.
Know your craft.
Yeah.
Brooke, what's your best TV of this year?
Tough one, isn't it?
It is tough. So my year has been a lot of watching films and
playing games.
And the only time I've really stopped watching films and playing games is to watch Netflix TV when particular series have come out, which I am saving for the next bit of this. So I think I would probably go for, we've been catching up on a lot of TV that we would have watched in the last year.
Yeah.
And most specifically, you know, I know it divides people. I know a lot of people really fucking hate this, but we love it. And we've been catching up on The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, right.
Do you guys watch The Big Bang Theory?
I hate it, but carry on.
I watch it every now and again. I mean, it's if you've got that amount of time to kill, it's on E4 all the time.
But this is the thing, because new seasons start on E4, the previous season is on Netflix. So what we've done, like, the last couple of years, we've not really watched it. Mm-hmm. So we've been binging, like, the last three seasons. Like, we're halfway through the second to latest season.
Yeah.
And it's easy watching TV. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, I'm busy with work and busy with other stuff. So to have a 22-minute sitcom on in the background that, if I start falling asleep, the worst I waste is 22 minutes before I get to go to bed. It works perfectly for me. But the thing is, it's actually really good for me. It's really good TV. I really enjoy it. I find it really funny. There are certain characters who I fucking loathe, but every sitcom has one of those characters. In this one, the guy just happens to be a colossal cuntosaurus.
Could be any of them.
Which one is it?
Sheldon. Yeah. I fucking hate him. When he's just being funny, I think he's hilarious, but when he's being a deliberate twat, I just want to climb in the TV and punch him in the dick. And if I met people in real life that acted like that, I know several people in real life that act like that, and I avoid them like the plague. I couldn't deal with it. I can't deal with him. But when it's just being a normal six people sitcom, it's fun, and I enjoy it. Canned laughter doesn't bother me.
See, that's one of the things that really gets me in that show particularly is, did you see there was an edited clip where they took out all the laughs?
Yeah.
And it's like, what are they laughing at?
There are times that I look at it and go, this is not funny. And it's not of the quality of something like, some of my favourite sitcoms that sit up there are Scrubs, Friends, Frasier, Will and Grace. Will and Grace is probably one of my favourites. And the thing with Will and Grace is, I know a lot of people that watch it and go, I don't get it, I don't find it's funny. And I do think a lot of that's because there's a lot of cultural references in there that a lot of people just don't understand. And that's fine. You don't have to fucking understand everything. There are still jokes in there that I have only recently got because I've seen the thing that they're referencing, and now I find that a bit funny.
Sure.
And I think me being a bit of a geek is why I know a lot of people who are geeks who fucking hate Big Bang Theory because it makes us all look like complete twats.
It's not a clever comedy. It's a comedy about clever people.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's inoffensive. It's sometimes for me. It's sometimes funny. Sometimes not.
But there's an episode from a couple of years ago that I think where Sheldon's agonising over whether or not he buys an Xbox One or a PS4, and it is genius. And it's genius in as much as I had the exact same conversations with my wife, who gives equally as less of a shit as his chick does in that episode. It's like watching my life. It really was. It's an inoffensive comedy. I understand why it angers some people.
I think there's a place for just like light-hearted throwaway sitcoms. You know,
but it's a sitcom. So we were talking earlier about Two and a Half Men. I watched Two and a Half Men. It's dog shit. It's absolute crap. But I giggle at it most of the time, and I've got no issue with it.
I don't have an issue in so much as I understand why they exist, and I understand why people like enjoy. I've enjoyed stuff like that in the past as well. I don't care, but I personally cannot stand watching Big Bang Theory. And I don't mean to do it in like a snobbish way. I just watch it and I go, well, I don't understand. And it could be a problem with me. I just don't understand where most of the jokes are. Yeah. And even with the Kang laughter, like, it makes me question, like,
almost every single one I watch has got.
Do I not get jokes? Is it me?
Canned laughter's never been a thing that bothered. I remember my parents used to go on about canned laughter when I wanted to watch Friends at home and they didn't want it on because they thought it was shit.
But like throwaway. I mean, studio audiences are like. I'm trying to think of something that would be shit, an equivalent. 2 points of lager and a packet of crisps, right? Cheers. Thank you. Very much. Yeah. So 2 points of lager and a packet of crisps.
Yeah.
Right. Has studio audience laughter in it, and it's also equally, I would say, bad comedy.
Yeah.
But I laughed at that. I mean, I would watch 2 points of lager and just like.
See, I wouldn't watch 2 points of lager and a packet of crisps if you paid me.
Yeah. See, I mean, it's fine. So I'm not trying to be snobbish about it. I will hold my hands up and say I also like some quote-unquote bad comedies. But
I just like shit sitcoms. And it's one of my favourite bits of TV. It's just crap 22-minute sitcoms.
I was the same with How I Met Your Mother. I watched that quite a lot. I mean,
I have to admit, I got quite invested in How I Met Your Mother.
I stopped enjoying it so much. There were some good episodes, but it was mostly bad. And a lot of the characters I started really disliking, but I wanted to see how it resolved itself until I did find out how it resolved itself.
And it didn't really resolve anything.
I'm probably as annoyed about that as I was about the end of Lost.
Yeah. It was, well, basically, you could have ended it at the end of the first episode and gone, all right, that's it. That's all I needed to see, because I've just wasted the last 8 years getting invested in this show.
I liked a lot of it. Yeah. There was one character in How I Met Your Mother who I thought for the whole time was absolute...
What?
The whole
time. And that could be, again, that could be any of them.
It was Lily.
Who? Lily? I thought she was great.
No, she's horrible.
She's an idiot. I thought she was great.
No, she's a horrible.
I don't really like Jason Segel as an actor.
No, I liked him. I like him, though. I've liked him in quite a few things. I liked him in that. Ted as well was a complete. Fucking hell, man. Just to put it mildly. For a central character, he's an absolute dick. But yeah, that's another one. It was, you know, it's fine for what it was for the majority of its run.
Yeah.
I'm
quite liking the Will and Grace revival. Will and Grace came back in the States. It hasn't started airing over here yet, but it came back a couple of months ago, and I've really been enjoying that. But again, you have to like Will and Grace, because now it's just all in-jokes. And you know, if you haven't watched the 8 seasons that came before it, they did do a really cool thing though. But they kind of retconned the last 3 or 4 episodes of season 8, which was good because it was one of the worst sitcom finales in the history of all sitcoms. So it was quite good that they got rid of that and moved on.
Well, sitcoms don't tend to have good finales, though. Friends, Seinfeld. I mean, you could list.
Friends is the only good one, the only good ending I have. And if you ignore season 9 of Scrubs, the end of season 8, which was the actual planned ending,
that was perfect. Only Fools before they brought that back.
Yeah.
That ended perfectly, and before they brought it back, but that ending where they got rich was just absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
That is just how it should have finished.
But sitcom endings as a whole are pretty shit. How I Met Your Mother being a fucking classic now. Yeah.
Do you think that's why Simpsons is still going? They just can't be bothered to
end it.
It's just a shame how bad it's got.
It was when someone told me that there are more bad episodes now of The Simpsons than good ones. And
I'm desperate to watch all of South Park, but I don't know if my heart can handle it because 20 seasons of just awfulness. But and there's no way legal for me to watch that. All of South Park in this country, but I have watched no TV this year, so Big Bang Theory and I suppose The Will and Grace revival.
Right, Netflix.
Okay, this is quite a tricky one though, because for a different reason.
If it starts with Netflix in the title sequence, I think it's okay to call it a Netflix original.
Or if when you're bringing it up on the screen, on the scroll, you know, on the menu, it's got Netflix written at the bottom.
So would you put Better Call Saul as a Netflix original? Because it's an exclusive.
exclusive and original are two different things.
I think they call it original. I think I would have, because weren't they also responsible for finishing off Breaking Bad as well? Or certainly in the UK, they screened it.
They took over the airing for Breaking Bad when someone didn't want it because it wasn't pulling in the numbers.
Fox had it, and then it was went to Channel 5, and then
that explains it.
Yeah, Channel 5.
Channel 5 for Home and Away and rated PG porn.
Channel 5 aired Series 2, one episode a night for 2 weeks or however long it was, and it was broadcast at midnight.
Oh wow!
And then but no one wanted to watch it, so we didn't get to Series 3. You fucking bears.
Yeah.
So what are you picking for?
So, I would have gone for Better Call Saul, but I decided it's probably technically not what I'm thinking of when I think of a Netflix original. And I only finished watching it yesterday. I'm pretty sure it's probably Brooker's choice as well.
It definitely is, yeah.
The Punisher.
Well, this will make this section quicker. Well, it's not mine, but it's just the two of you going for it.
The Punisher, I guess you could say it's a follow-on from Series 2 of Daredevil, but it quite only in the sense that that's what introduced Punisher, right? And that actually, that was him getting his revenge as the Punisher against the mob. And then Series 1 of The Punisher is about him dealing with PTSD of being a war veteran.
So this is one of Marvel's...
It is the Marvel.
So it goes along with Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist...
Yeah, Luke Cage,
and then Defenders.
Yeah.
But it basically follows on. You're right, it does follow on from Season 2 of Daredevil, but when he's not the Punisher anymore. It basically deals with what he does now that he's done with his the Punisher bit.
Yeah.
Now he's not Punisher.
Now he's just Frank Castle.
Now he's Frank Castle, yeah.
I couldn't call it Castle because it's already a TV show.
Could call it Frank.
Not quite as vice.
It's already a TV show called Frank, isn't there?
Well,
people in the UK are getting confused with, you know, drug rehabilitation.
Yeah. No, but I think what this series does is has new characters. So Daredevil's not in it at all. None of the Defenders are in it. Karen Page is in it for a bit as a sort of...
What, you say Callum Petch?
Callum Petch is not in it.
No,
it would change the complexion of the entire series, I think, if Callum was Frank Castle's sidekick.
He's talking to them. I love you, Callum.
But the complexion of the series, I think, is also different to Daredevil 2. Like, the way it looks and feels, it is very much its own show.
Yes.
It's not... Well, it is part of the Netflix...
It's part of the Netflix Marvel series. Universe, but it very quickly establishes itself as outside of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Which is... good, because it separates itself from and everything else, and I think
and it means you don't have to come up with convoluted reasons why the Defenders aren't there stopping stuff happening, like bombs going off that blow up buildings and terrorise people. It's like, well, the Defenders aren't there because it's not their jurisdiction anymore.
That's always one thing with superhero films, isn't it, when you've got, well, people always bring it up when heroes are their own individual films.
Yeah.
I mean, not so much Thor when he's off in space and everything, but when it's Earth based, so when Doctor Strange is doing his, or Iron Man's doing, why don't the rest of them just turn up?
Yeah.
Why isn't Iron
Where's
Man
Captain
just
America
rather,
protecting him?
Why doesn't one of them just turn up and help out?
Yeah.
But so it does do a good job of keeping a reason for the Defenders not being there.
Yeah.
And it never mentions that they're not there.
Taking some of their 28 days annual leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
but you kind of, once you're into it, you go, you forget that there are Defenders and Daredevils and things hanging. You forget that they're there. You forget they're part of it. It is its own show.
Yeah.
And it is... It's not about being a superhero. It's not even about being a hero. It's a, well, in a way, I suppose it is, but it's about being a veteran.
It's about
having PTSD, about dealing with the fallout of returning from war. It's about family as well. Like, what is a family? Is it the people that you're close with? Is it the people that you were born into, you know?
It deals a lot with... Especially in the States, it's a big thing, but it deals a lot with how veterans are treated in general.
Yeah.
And when they come back from war, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of 2A's are going to get a bit angry in that show, I think.
Yeah, but the whole thing is, like, there's no real villain until perhaps the middle point in the series.
Yeah.
Up until then, it is all about the people in Frank Castle's life. Because it comes up with a conspiracy story, like why people would be invested in these characters and what they're doing, and the reason for Frank having to go back to being that sort of person who murders folks.
Yeah.
But which is done very cleverly, I think.
Yeah. I think there are two bits to it as well, without spoiling anything. There are two very poignant bits to the whole film, and I think I think the first is the beginning, when he's done being a Punisher.
Because
he's done being a Punisher within 10 minutes of the show starting.
Well, in the first scene, you see him burning the flak jacket.
Yeah, before the opening credits.
Yeah.
He burns his flak jacket, and that's it, he's not the Punisher anymore. And he just becomes Frank Castle. And then when he puts it on again, like two-thirds of the way through the show, and
just, it has meaning when he does it. It's like, it's not just, oh, this is the reason that we've got Punisher back in costume. It's like the fact that he can't escape the stuff that he's done.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing about Punisher. Like, the whole reason that he is the way he is developed through Series 2 of Daredevil, which is that he has PTSD. He has a proper brain injury. The reason he keeps seeing flashbacks to his family is he physically can't escape that happening, and it would drive you mad. But, yeah, I just thought they dealt with the whole thing really, really well. And it was...
And supremely violent.
Yeah.
Supremely violent.
No nipples. You know, when there's a sex scene, and there's a few sex scenes, you don't see any nudity, because that would corrupt minds.
Yeah.
You know, but he can go machine gun people down in a playground, or he can go and...
But that's the thing, though, that when he puts his skull flak jacket on, and then just causes bloody mayhem.
Yeah.
It is one of the most fun scenes in TV ever.
There's a scene where... I won't, again, try not to spoil it, because it's only been out like less than
a
week. And I just, but he says, "I'll wait." Do you know which scene? But he stays back.
Yeah.
That's the moment he said that. I just had like a grin. I come up. It was like couldn't stop it from suppress it. I was like, "Yeah, this is gonna be good."
Yeah.
And it's like it's a bloodlust, though, right? I mean, I don't feel good thinking that he's gonna stay and murder loads of people. This is gonna be great.
No.
But it is entertaining, and it's shot really well. We were talking before we started recording.
Yeah.
The scene in Series 2 of Daredevil, where he's in the prison.
Yeah.
One of the best scenes in the whole of the Marvel show so far.
Yeah, it's a beautifully choreographed fight scene. It's a beautifully filmed scene in general.
But that's like, there's so many scenes like that in this series.
Yeah.
That it was totally worth them doing. I would say possibly the best one they've done. Yeah. I want to go back and watch Daredevil again, but...
I did go into it very biased. We've spoken a lot, especially on the podcast. Punisher's my favourite Marvel character. Even the shit Dolph Lundgren version of the Punisher, I really quite like. But yeah, I adored it, and it was so much fun. And it's for people that know the characters, it's got such an amazing payoff for the end.
Yeah,
and it is a payoff. It is something that people that know the characters know is coming, and it's still... I know it crossed a lot of people's lines, I think. I know at least one person that had to turn away while they were watching a couple of scenes in that film, because they are supremely violent. Yeah. They are very nasty.
But it's been created by Steve Lightfoot, who's behind Hannibal as well, isn't he? Brian Fuller.
Yeah.
And if anyone's seen Hannibal, they'll know...
How violent it can get. Yeah,
so it carries that through to this.
It does.
Perfect guide to create the show, then.
I hope it gets to season two.
I think so.
I don't know what they do with it season two, but
I think they've left it.
But that's why I'm not a showrunner. I'm just a viewer.
Yeah, for the next series. Right. Not everything was tied up with a bow.
No.
There were a few things there that you think, oh, okay, this could come into play again.
I like that they brought in Micro.
Yeah.
Micro's a really fun character. I think they took too long. Anybody that's read the comic books or seen any of the other films knows that Micro is his sidekick. So to waste 3 hours at the beginning of the show getting to that point was a bit of a waste. But that's probably...
But it worked. Yeah, they did it well.
That's probably my only complaint about the show. I thought it was fucking great.
And the acting, I thought, for a couple of the cops, I thought... Yeah. I can't remember her name, but the main... Lieutenant.
The Homeland girl. Yeah. Girl.
Yeah, I know what you mean. She grew on me.
Yeah.
But her partner did not grow on me.
I think I saw her in like an episode of The Borgias, is the only thing I can name her from.
Yeah.
Oh, Bernthal, I said it then, and I'll say it now. Bernthal's a fucking great Punisher.
Perfect casting. Perfect casting. Yeah.
My pick is Stranger Things Season 2.
Cool. Yeah.
Season 1 came out of nowhere as this like surprise hit. No one knew anything about it. Just appeared on Netflix one day, and everyone was like, I've got to watch this. Fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, it played on nostalgia as much as anything ever has. It made you think of 80s movies and everything from Ghostbusters and E.T. There was one scene in season one where they're all riding their bikes, and I thought that was going to make them take off their bikes and then just flipped over the cop car.
Yeah,
but I thought this is going to be like E.T. They're all going to take off their bikes. No, cop car done. And season two, and you're kind of worried about the difficult second album. It wasn't as good as season one, but I don't think it could have been. Partly because it was such a surprise hit. It was a bit different because nothing had been done like that for quite a while. I mean, obviously you've got all the 80s movies, but they weren't being nostalgic when they were made.
Yeah.
And then you've got stuff like Super 8 as a movie, which that kind of thing, but as a film, but nothing really like that for a while. And it was, so season two picks up pretty much as season one left off. Elle isn't really talking to the boys anymore, the situation's changed. So some people still want to see it, it's only quite new out, so I'm not trying to spoil it too much, but obviously the Upside Down is starting to affect the everyday life of the town. What's the town's name?
Couldn't tell you. I was this close, I almost went Haddonfield, and that's not what it's called.
Haddonfield,
But yeah, it's starting to affect the town, but it's still quite, you've still got all the fun elements, like the kids, the four lads, they're great. They're really good as, as a little group of, Dustin as well, he's by far the best one.
Yeah, it's not fun. And his thing in the final episode is like,
but yeah, it's just, it's so much fun, it works, it's got mystery, it's got a bit of intrigue. Even the 8th episode, I think it was, people were criticising. As you're watching it as part of a binge watch, it doesn't really matter that much. If you're watching it week by week, you can see why it might grate a bit more. But for me, just watching it, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
You just get it done.
I think it's a great episode. My problem is its placement.
Yeah,
I think it broke the pace.
The flow, yeah.
It was too interruptive, wasn't it?
Well, because any other episode, I think it would have been fine, but the way the episode previous ended with what is a fucking spectacular Aliens homage, and then moved on to this, which was just completely broke everything, and then went back. So I was like, move it over there, or up to the end. Its placement is important, because it changes everything afterwards. Yeah. If you'd have done it the episode before, I think a lot of people would have been happier with it.
Yeah.
I mean, all of
But it's not a bad episode. Not in the start. This is a fucking brilliant episode.
I didn't like it.
It's not as bad as what people are making out. It just felt a bit misplaced.
I liked it. It felt like they'd taken L and thrown it into a Michael Jackson music video.
I mean, the whole Ghostbuster, even them catching the little creature for the Ghostbuster thing was just brilliant. And it's got everything. It's got the nostalgia things. It makes you think of all the 80s movies you watched when you were growing up. It's cool. It's funny. It's charming. It's got a really good plot. You know, whole Upside Down and that element to it, and what the scientists are kind of doing and looking at and exploring.
The Demogorgons and the
Demogorgons, and
it's basically what happened if John Carpenter made the Goonies.
Steve was a great hero.
Yeah,
that was
brilliant.
Yeah, poor Steve.
I really like it. It's been confirmed for season 3 now, hasn't it?
Yes, and it definitely ended that season 3 was possible.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it can keep going as good as it is, you like to think so.
Netflix can't do season 3s. Netflix can't do season 3s.
I mean, the other thing some people have suggested you could do with it is alright, you lose a lot of the current cast, you keep their characters and kind of do what the original It did, and go forward, so have them as adults, and you move it forward to say the 90s, so then you've got another period of nostalgia you can exploit, but you've still got the same characters, but you've got them older, so the kids go, but some of those,
yeah,
so,
right.
But yeah, that was great. I watched it over two sittings in 2 days, and probably just a bit disappointed I didn't drag it out a bit longer.
Sorry. It's fucking Larry David.
But yeah, that was my favourite Netflix show of
it's a good choice.
Yeah. But with you guys both being punished, that's done.
That's it. We're out of time.
That's a wrap. Yeah, I don't actually know when this is going to be released.
No, we're not sure yet.
No.
Soon.
But yes, thank you for all for joining us over the last 5 long years of podcasting. We'll see you again at least in other ventures, if not this one, at some point.
The Failed Critics podcast is presented by Steve Norman and Owen Hughes, with contributions from different guests every week, with original music provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com from the track The Bandit, remixed by James Yule, who you can find at jamesyule.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Failed Critics, on iTunes and all good podcast apps, or you can check us out at failedcritics.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a rating or a review. And why not check out our sister podcasts, Character Unlock and Field & Mullinger's Underground Nights, from the Failed Media Network of podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.